Some went on in this manner for months before dying. A very few survived and regained consciousness, but not their former liveliness. They existed in a state of profound apathy, like extinct volcanoes, in the words of one doctor. In 10 years, the disease killed some 5 million people, and then quietly went away. It didn't get much lasting attention because in the meantime, an even worse epidemic, indeed the worst in history, swept across the world. It is sometimes called the Great Swine Flu Epidemic, and sometimes the Great Spanish Flu Epidemic, but in either case it was ferocious. World War I killed 21 million people in 4 years. Swine flu did the same in its first 4 months. Almost 80% of American casualties in the First World War came not from enemy fire, but from flu. In some units, the mortality rate was as high as 80%. Swine flu arose as a normal, non-lethal flu in the spring of 1918, but somehow, over the following months, no one knows how or where, it mutated into something more severe. A fifth of victims suffered only mild symptoms, but the rest became gravely ill and often died. Some succumbed within hours, others held on for a few days. In the United States, the first deaths were recorded among sailors in Boston in late August 1918, but the epidemic quickly spread to all parts of the country. Schools closed, public entertainments were shut down, people everywhere wore masks. It did little good. Between the autumn of 1918 and spring of the following year, 548,452 people died of the flu in America. The toll in Britain was 220,000. With similar numbers dead in France and Germany. No one knows the global toll, as records in the Third World were often poor, but it was not less than 20 million, and probably more like 50 million. Some estimates have put the global total as high as 100 million. In an attempt to devise a vaccine, medical authorities conducted tests on volunteers at a military prison on Deer Island in Boston Harbor. The prisoners were promised pardons if they survived a battery of tests. These tests were rigorous, to say the least. First, the subjects were injected with infected lung tissue taken from the dead, and then sprayed in the eyes, nose, and mouth with infectious aerosols. If they still failed to succumb, they had their throats swabbed with discharges taken from the sick and dying. If all else failed, they were required to sit open-mouthed while a gravely ill victim was helped to cough into their faces. Out of, somewhat amazingly, 300 men who volunteered, the doctors chose 62 for the tests. None contracted the flu. Not one. The only person who did grow ill was the ward doctor, who swiftly died. The probable explanation for this is that the epidemic had passed through the prison a few weeks earlier, and the volunteers, all of whom had survived that visitation, had natural immunity. Much about the 1918 flu is understood poorly or not at all. One mystery is how it erupted suddenly, all over, in places separated by oceans, mountain ranges, and other earthly impediments. A virus can survive for no more than a few hours outside a host body, so how could it appear in Madrid, Bombay, and Philadelphia all in the same week? The probable answer is that it was incubated and spread by people who had only slight symptoms or none at all. Even in normal outbreaks, about 10% of people have the flu, but are unaware of it because they experience no ill effects. And because they remain in circulation, they tend to be the great spreaders of the disease. That would account for the 1918 outbreak's widespread distribution, but it still doesn't explain how it managed to lay low for several months before erupting so explosively at more or less the same time all over. Even more mysterious is that it was primarily devastating to people in the prime of life. Flu normally is hardest on infants and the elderly, but in the 1918 outbreak, deaths were overwhelmingly among people in their 20s and 30s. Older people may have benefited from a resistance gained from earlier exposure to the same strain, but why the very young were similarly spared is unknown. The greatest mystery of all is why the 1918 flu was so ferociously deadly, when most flus are not. We still have no idea. From time to time, certain strains of virus return. A disagreeable Russian virus known as H1N1 caused severe outbreaks over wide areas in 1933, then again in the 1950s, and yet again in the 1970s. Where it went in the meantime each time is uncertain. One suggestion is that viruses hide out unnoticed in populations of wild animals before trying their hand at a new generation of humans. No one can rule out the possibility that the great swine flu epidemic might once again rear its head. And if it doesn't, others well might. New and frightening viruses crop up all the time. Ebola, Lassa, and Marburg fevers all have tended to flare up and die down again. But no one can say that they aren't quietly mutating away somewhere or simply awaiting the right opportunity to burst forth in a catastrophic manner. It is now apparent that AIDS has been among us much longer than anyone originally suspected. Researchers at the Manchester Royal Infirmary in England discovered that a sailor who had died of mysterious, untreatable causes in 1959, in fact, had AIDS. But for whatever reasons, the disease remained generally quiescent for another 20 years. The miracle is that other such diseases haven't gone rampant. Lassa fever, which wasn't first detected until 1969 in West Africa, is extremely virulent and little understood. In 1969, a doctor at a Yale University lab in New Haven, Connecticut, who was studying Lassa fever, came down with it. He survived. But, more alarmingly, a technician in a nearby lab with no direct exposure also contracted the disease and died. Happily, the outbreak stopped there. But we can't count on such good fortune always. Our lifestyles invite epidemics. Air travel makes it possible to spread infectious agents across the planet with amazing ease. An Ebola virus could begin the day in, say, Benin, and finish it in New York or Hamburg or Nairobi or all three. It means also that medical authorities increasingly need to be acquainted with pretty much every malady that exists everywhere. But of course they're not. In 1990, a Nigerian living in Chicago was exposed to Lassa fever.